hearing is Hatcher against Indianapolis. Mr. Wagner.
Good morning. My name is Dennis Wagner, and I represent Lee Hatcher, the plaintiff and appellant in the case before the court. The parties in January of 2001 entered a settlement agreement concerning a 1983 action in which the case was settled for $100,000 with the exception of attorney's fees.
Can we identify what percentage of your overall time was spent on the issues in which you prevailed, disregarding your subsequent success at settlement?
I would say somewhere around 80 to 85% on that issue.
The question I wanted to ask you, I actually have two questions. One of them is a simple one. Do I understand you correctly in your reply brief that you're conceding for purposes of the cross appeal that the $18,707 award of costs should be vacated given that the settlement agreement included costs? And my second question is sort of a bigger one. The settlement agreement itself twice refers not simply to, you know, arbitrating attorney's fees or anything. It purports to assign to Magistrate Judge Shields the particular responsibility for doing this. And I can't tell whether you're kind of hiring her as an arbitrator, whether this is some sort of backhanded 636C reference. It's usually when parties go into court, they don't say, well, we've decided we want Magistrate Judge Shields, not Magistrate Judge Godich or Magistrate Judge, you know, whoever else is down there. And it actually has been a different judge's case during, according to the docket sheet. So maybe you can throw some light on this.
Thank you. First of all, we concede that we had a deal, and we had a settlement agreement. It was a private agreement between the parties, and one of those was that we were only going to decide the issue of attorney's fees. And secondly, yes, we did, since this was a private matter, we did seek the services of Judge Shields in this case, and
In what capacity did you envision her functioning? Was this, in a sense, a waiver of a right to appeal to the district court thereafter and hence on up? Or I'm just not familiar with doing it this way.
Well, the language of the settlement agreement said mediation and resolution.
Right.
And we were going, I believe at that point, all right, the district court was out of this case, and that was the purpose of the settlement agreement.
You showed the district court the settlement agreement.
Yes.
And so I guess maybe it was just never spelled out to the district court that you thought he had been divested somehow of jurisdiction to rule on the fees. But why would he have had to consider it that way, since usually you just refer things to magistrate judges?
Well, when we had a meeting with the judge, we explained our settlement agreement, and we explained to the court that we had selected Magistrate Sue Shields. Both parties knew her and recognized her as to be a competent person to resolve it, and that was the purpose behind it.
Could you have done the same thing with the district judge? In other words, could you have gone in and said, you know, Judge Young, we've chosen Judge Lozano or Judge Tinder for the rest of this case? Could you do that?
When we went into Judge Young's court and had the meeting, we were very cautious about letting the judge know that what our settlement agreement was, what the deal was, what the amount was, and we indicated to the judge that that was our intent. So if he had some problem with it, he didn't say so, because he told us he says, I'll give you a head, I'll give Judge Shields a heads up.
Right, but could you answer my question?
Your question is, could I have gone to some other...
Could the settlement agreement have said, the person who's going to, you know, for mediation and resolution is going to be Sarah Barker?
Previously, this case had been assigned at random by the district court's docketing system to Judge Young. He had decided it. The parties decide they prefer Judge Barker. Can the parties require the district court to assign the case to Judge Barker? That's the question.
Well, if it's still within their jurisdiction, and our point was we
Whose
had...
jurisdiction?
The Judge Young's. We had settled the case. It was a private settlement between the parties.
Well, if your view is you had settled the whole case, then I don't see how it can come back to Magistrate Judge Shields. You need to go to the American Arbitration Association if you had in mind that the litigation is over and now we need a private dispute resolver. Your view must be that you settled part of the case and part of the case was unsettled. And I hope you can hear that all three of us are then inquiring how it is possible to name the federal official who will handle the rest.
It was subject to her accepting the case. It was subject to she had the right to decline the case.
No, you're getting the cart before the horse. Take the case where you say, we're tired of Judge Young. Our further decisions will be made by Judge Barker. You would not say, well, this is now subject to Judge Barker agreeing. The first question is whether it's lawful, whether you have, by consent, removed Judge Young from the case. There's no provision in federal practice for litigants to strike a judge off their case, not individually and not by consent.
Our case was over. We had settled the case.
You don't think your case is over. You're still here.
That
you think you're still in the federal court system.
Because the judge made a ruling on 21 months after we had petitioned the court for a ruling on attorney's fees. And when we asked the court, informed the court...
Let me ask this question in a different way. What do the rules of the Southern District of Indiana say about the process of consenting to final disposition by a magistrate judge under Section 636C?
It's indicating...
I have two questions. First, can that be done without the consent of the district judge under local rules? I think probably local rules could either require consent or allow the parties to do it by themselves. And second, for a 636C consent in Southern Indiana, can the parties name their magistrate judge? That's a question of local rules.
Well, when we went before the district judge, Judge Young, we asked...
I'm asking a concrete question about the local rules of the Southern District of Indiana. If you don't know the answer, you can say, I don't know.
Well, I'm not clear on it, but I will say that I believe that under 636 it requires the permission.
I'm not asking about Section 636. I am asking about the local rules of the Southern District of Indiana. And as I say, if you don't know the answer, just say, I don't know.
Oh, I'm not sure on that. I'll acknowledge that. When
I want to address just for a minute what Judge Young did, because if we were to decide that all of this reference stuff was so much surplusage, he is the one who resolved your attorney's fees claim.
Yes, and we think pursuant to the case, the judge was in error in arbitrarily reducing those fees by 70%, and under the case of Simpson versus Sheehan, which is what the court relied on, that decision was reversed by this tribunal, in which they indicated that the district judge in that case, in which that was the case in which a prisoner was held over 13 hours, and the court said what the district court did was issue sanctions against the sheriff through attorney fees, and it was not allowed to do that. They had to have a rational basis in determining what
Speaking
those
of
fees
rational
were.
Basis is, do we have any way of knowing whether the $100,000 settlement resulted from the defendant's analysis of the merits of the appeal or an intention to avoid further litigation costs? Will the record tell us that?
I don't believe, I think there's some speculation put in the record, and that's all it is speculation. Our bargain was that we, I think the city contended that it was appealing, it settled the case because it didn't want to get further litigation costs of $80,000 to hire outside counsel. We figured up at the rate that they were hiring them, that would have been 800 hours, and we thought that was ridiculous.
Thank you.
Let me save my time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Wagner. Mr. Overholt.
Good morning. My name is Anthony Overholt. I'm here representing the City of Indianapolis and the defendant, Mr. Stahl. First, I'd like to address the issue of jurisdiction. Clearly, the district court had jurisdiction to enter the award of attorney's fees.
So what did you guys mean? You signed this thing, too, saying that you were going to refer it to Magistrate Judge Shields. And I don't know, I don't have any way of assessing what that means. I thought maybe at one point she had been perhaps the assigned magistrate judge on the case, in which case it would have made some sense to me that just continuing with what had happened in a procedurally regular manner, but that does not appear to be true. It seems to have been Magistrate Gottich's case. My other question for you is a hypothetical. Suppose this settlement agreement, forgetting about the complexity of attorney's fees, suppose this settlement agreement for $100,000 had been entered into the day before the trial. In that instance, would it not be correct to say, as paragraph 1 of the settlement agreement itself does recite, that it's in full settlement and satisfaction of any and all of plaintiff's claims, thereby including the Fourth Amendment claims, the excessive force claims, and so on. And if that's true, then why should we read it differently if settlement happens to come up just prior to oral argument in this court as opposed to just prior to trial?
As to the first point, plaintiff and the defendant had extensive discussions about how to settle the case. Plaintiff was very concerned that a magistrate other than Judge Gottich be involved in the process. We agreed to do so. The Southern District local rules, in response to Judge Easterbrook's question, does not have an express provision that allows parties to choose who their magistrate is.
Although I've now found the rule, it's 72.1H, and it does appear to allow the parties to consent to disposition by a magistrate judge without getting a special reference from the district judge. The district judge is cut out of the process if the parties consent.
That is correct.
But there's just nothing about naming your magistrate.
That is absolutely correct. Just as this court, just as the parties could not select a district judge to hear the case.
But you agreed.
But you
with
did
them.
Anyway.
Yes, I did.
And the thing is, given this agreement, what does one do? I mean, we usually enforce settlement agreements, and the one thing that's clear from this settlement agreement is that the parties seemed to contemplate somebody other than the district judge would do it, that there would be, at a broader level, a magistrate judge reference. And you're suggesting that we should just throw out the whole clause, which will be referred to Magistrate Judge Shields, and assume that Judge Young could keep it, whereas perhaps the lesser thing would be to say that it's the reference to her in particular that should be regarded as surplusage, but that some magistrate judge randomly assigned according to whatever the rules of the court may be should have done this.
To deprive the district court of the power to rule on the request for attorney's fees, there had to be a formal written consent on the record pursuant to 636B.
And why isn't the settlement agreement that formal written consent? I mean, both parties say, we hereby consent that the magistrate judge will take over,
no,
mediate and resolve.
Exactly. That's what it says. It says mediate and resolve the issue of attorney's fees. It does not say that they consent to magistrate jurisdiction to enter judgment in the case.
But that's what resolve means.
I mean, you're
if you consent in a normal civil suit under Local Rule 72.1H that a magistrate judge will resolve our dispute, it seems to me that's an effective consent.
And here you have a court that provided no reason whatsoever for disregarding the terms of the settlement agreement, which call for the resolution of the issue by a particular magistrate, Magistrate Shields.
It is not an effective consent for two reasons. One, the language is not clear and unambiguous.
In your view?
Yes, in my view. It is not
this
clear.
Is this the magic words? In addition to the word resolve, you have to enter finally dispose of, completely handle, and, you know, do what lawyers do, add six synonyms for the word resolve.
There is a specific procedure under 636C to have magistrate jurisdiction. That did not happen. This agreement was not made a matter of record on the court docket reflecting the consent was given by both parties. Therefore, there has not been consent.
But
my view,
you present it to the district court, though. I don't see what...
What's left? What the local rule refers to, just like the statute, refers to, quote, specific written consent. Which was written, it was specific, and it certainly is a consent.
But it's not consent to jurisdiction. What it is a consent to allow the magistrate to review and mediate, if possible, the question of attorney's fees.
But
it
also
nothing.
Says resolve.
We can do a responsive reading.
Perhaps I should get on to the next one. I guess we can continue debating what that means.
Okay.
Again, it's
we do understand that what your position is.
And I'm sorry, Judge Wood, I think you might have to ask me the question again. You asked what would happen or what
yes,
it would mean.
My question was, you know, because part of what seems to be going on looking at Judge Young's order is he seems to be looking at it through the lens of someone who prevailed only on the Fourth Amendment claim and not on the excessive force claim. And so reading the settlement agreement itself, it looks to me as though the whole case was settled, and I also thought that would have been crystal clear if the settlement had occurred the day before the trial, and I don't see why we should read the settlement agreement differently, any and all claims, just because it's the day before or whatever, you know, shortly before oral argument in this court, given that we would have had the power to have reversed or done whatever seemed appropriate. The whole case was still in play, if you will, at appeal stage, and this was, you know, more money than, by a factor of five, actually, more money, or maybe a factor of two if you take into account the cost resolution, but it was significantly more money. So if it really is a settlement of the whole case, why didn't the district court make a mistake in trying to evaluate how much success there was for purposes of attorney's fees?
While the plaintiff did receive more money, the district court did not abuse its discretion, even when considering that additional money that went to the plaintiff, in making its award.
But didn't the district judge continue to think of this as a case in which there had been success on only one claim and failure on another? And isn't that wrong after the settlement, if you will. No, I mean, cases are settled all the time, right, before trial, and, mm-hmm. and it's the whole case that's settled, and one would evaluate settlement as such.
I don't think the district court's order on that point is a model of clarity. But I also don't believe that the district court, when the record is looked at in its entirety, abused its discretion in making the award that it did.
But do we know it would have exercised its discretion the same way if it had thought of this as a settlement agreement that pertained to the whole case? How can we know that?
I don't think we can know that with absolute certainty.
Well, he didn't tithe the percentage, the 70%, to anything at all concrete about the case. He didn't analyze the percentage of time that was spent on the successful claim. And he didn't give any credit to the plaintiff for the success that, you know, that springs forth from the settlement negotiations.
I see my time is up. May I address that point?
Please.
I think the district court did in fact look at those factors. I think, again, while the district court opinion on those points may not be as clear as what we would like, reading through the opinion, it is clear to me that the district court did in fact think about those factors, did address the fact that the plaintiff received a $100,000 settlement, and looked at the record as a whole, given the three factors suggested by Justice O'Connor and Farrar, and made its decision on that basis. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wagner. The case is taken under advisement.